Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Cubby Croncast, the only San Francisco Giants podcast to talk about how the Giants only seem to trade for guys who look startlingly similar to Gabe Kapler. I am Brian Murphy, former managing editor of McCubbyChronicles.com, the San Francisco Giants blog on SB Nation. And joining me is Doug Brazzoni, who writes at GiantsDoug.substack.com. And this week we're going to be interviewing Roger Munter, formerly of McCovey Chronicles, who wrote the Minor Lines section and has since branched off and is doing his own Substack that covers exclusively and intensively the Giants minor league system. There are Giants, and you can find that. We'll give more details in the interview. This is just a little preamble. We'll cover the system, sort of an overview. We won't get into too many specifics, but there's going to be guys you haven't heard of, and there's going to be some high risers, fast risers that Roger points out. So good stuff. And if you want to know what's going on with Joey Bart, what might go on with him now that he's been sent down, definitely something you want to listen to. We recorded this after the Giants swept the Dodgers, so who knows what has happened since then. Hopefully it was a good week for the Giants, as Doug and I indicated in our last episode. Definitely they should have been 4-2 this week, facing the Royals and the Pirates, but you never know. But what I do know is you'll enjoy this interview with Roger. Joining us now from There Are Giants, his Substack that he's been writing since February of 2020, is our old colleague, Roger Munter, formerly of Minor Lines on McCovey Chronicles. Roger, welcome to the McCovey Croncast.
It's like old times, isn't it? I'm formerly of the McCroncast.
That's right. That's right. We briefly did a little mini series, I guess you could call it, as well. It's an unnamed podcast. wait. A prospect podcast.
Unnamed prospect podcast with Roger Munter, if I'm remembering right.
It was the worst acronym of all time, right?
It was awful.
It's a catchy name, though. Give it up.
I mean, yeah. I don't know if the content was any better than the name, but.
that gets us right into it. You were a staple of the site then and now, indispensable now you really did sort of transition. This is your new career, is covering the minor leagues. And I mean, that, if nothing else, it seems like you're having the time of your life.
Yeah, I'm in a real happy place. I have to say that, you know, the Giants are big proponents of mental health. And I have to say, this has been a great move for my mental well-being. Every time I walk into a minor league stadium and I walk out on the field and talk to the guys and watch BP and smell the hot dogs going, I'm in a pretty happy place, I got to say.
So it's kind of like when I go into a movie theater, probably. That's great. Do you have favorite stadiums, or do you stick to the same couple and you just let them come to you?
You know, I am mostly, so I'm driving down to Richmond, which is not a fun drive, I will say, from the I-95 corridor. Not the greatest drive in America. And that stadium, of course, is just old, and past its prime, to put it politely. In fact, I believe when the Giants first went there, there's no like stadium naming rights in Richmond, and it's because when they moved there, they were like, "Oh, you're only going to be here another year or two. Why bother making a 10-year deal with someone?" And that just kept going on for like year after year after year after year.
God.
For 12 years, they still don't have a name for that stadium because you're not going to be here that long. But all that said, I love going there.
That's great. I mean, it all shows up in the work. I mean, you're interviewing coaches, players, you know, you can listen to Roger's podcast that he has as part of the site, but also just you're getting the minor lines, but even more detail. So if you enjoyed that feature on McCovey Chronicles back in the day, Brady's doing a minor league recap as well currently, you're not going to miss out on the developments in the Giants minor league system, which is why I've roped Roger in now, because it's been, you know, it's been enough time, I think, so to kind of get a sense of how the system's doing this year. We're kind of getting ready to start talking about the draft, but really I just want to dip into these upper minor levels to get a sense, because, you know, I think at some point in the next year, the Giants are going to need to start relying on that to supplement their major league roster instead of having to always trade for Mariners and Orioles castoffs and Phillies castoffs. But I did want to point something out. Two notable things happened this week. The River Cats experienced their 11th consecutive loss. They set a franchise record for consecutive losses. I'm sure that didn't happen. That obviously didn't happen when they were an A's affiliate. So, haha. Welcome to the Giants land. But also, am I correct? If I read this correctly, the Eugene Emeralds, the high A team, they set a franchise record with 3 consecutive walk-off home run wins. I think those were the 2 things I saw.
Only one of them was a home run. The Friday night, Jairo Pomares hit a 3-run homer to walk it off. But they did have 3 consecutive walk-off wins, which is incredible. And amazingly, so Sacramento almost had a 12th consecutive loss, but they got a pinch hit home run in the 9th to tie it by Eason Diaz. And then he later hit a walk-off home run in the, I think, 11th or 12th.
That's my guy, Eason Diaz. Driving the Eason Diaz hype train.
Walk-offs were all the rage in the system the last few days. There have been a ton of them. You know, I kind of feel bad for Sacramento because nobody wants to live through an 11-game losing streak. But also, I think their situation is sort of part and parcel of the way the Giants constructed their daily roster, that Sacramento is constantly having people leave for, you know, like a week at a time. The Giants had this big taxi squad on the East Coast. You know, Ramos was gone for a week and he comes back for 2 days and he's gone again. And Jelly missed a start to be gone. I think during that losing streak, I believe like Luke Williams, Stuart Fairchild, Kevin Padlow were all DFA'd off the Sacramento roster.
Oh my gosh.
Michael Plassmeyer was traded on the day he was supposed to make a start. Sean Jelly was called up on the day he was supposed to make a start. I mean, just kind of no wonder that it's hard to get much traction in that sort of environment. You know, the team is there to serve the Giants' ability to win games, and that's happening. But it must be pretty hard on Dave Brundage and the staff down there to kind of figure out what, you know, 15 people they actually have on the team on any given day.
It is one of the things that I've noticed, that the players that tend to be on the roster every day are not the better players. Like, you can't, like Jason Bosler, you can't count on Jason Bosler being there every day. You can count on the guy they got from the Braves last year, who's, I think, the Braves, the third baseman. Wyatt Matheson. Yeah, you can count on him. And, you know, that shows up on the field.
Well, I don't want to say anything negative about Bryce Johnson, who I love, and who is there every day. The point is, yeah, I mean, Jason Bosler is not just gone when he's called up. He's often gone when he's on a taxi squad. People are gone. People are gone a lot on this team. And also during the streak, David Villar was gone for a week after taking a fastball off the wrist. So that didn't help. So that they've been down a few bodies of late.
Oh, for sure. I mean, one body they're probably going to be gaining, though, thanks for the assist here, is Joey Bart, who was optioned down this week. And I don't believe he's actually joined San Francisco, Sacramento just yet, or maybe he did today. They were going to hold him up in San Francisco for a couple days before he came down. But I just wanted, have you heard anything specific about Joey Bart around the cages or wherever you hang out when you're there? What does it mean if they say the coaches are going to be working with him when he's down in Sacramento?
You know, not to go off on a tangent and totally not answer your question, but the day after he was sent down, I wrote about what is going on with the system. And there's this interesting dichotomy that's been going on with the Giants the last couple of years, where they do such a great job developing guys they're getting from other systems, but they aren't having a great year with their own top prospects. And that's, you know, Elliot Ramos has really struggled in Sacramento, although struggled in sort of interesting ways. You know, Joey Bart obviously had trouble in the major leagues. Hunter Bishop and Patrick Bailey are both kind of scuffling down in A-ball in ways that you wouldn't expect from high college picks. Louis Matos has had a struggle in high A. So a lot of the big names have actually kind of not progressed much this year. It's not been an arrow up year for a lot of the big names, but they have such success at getting, you know, the Louis Gonzalez's and Jacob Junis of the world. It's interesting to see that that hasn't yet translated to the guys that they have a lot invested in themselves. And hopefully it will translate to that soon.
So Roger, what you're saying then is that because Marco Luciano is having a good year, we should put all our hopes into him, and there's absolutely no way he ever has any setbacks.
I mean, putting all your hopes on one player is always a great strategy when it comes to watching prospects, because they never, ever, ever fail. And so it is important to just pick that one. Yeah.
Well, one thing about Hunter Bishop, do want to point out that since June started, he's hitting 294, 415, 974. He had a 3-for-5 with double, two singles, a run scored, an RBI on Thursday. He's got 974 slugging percentage to start the month. I know we're 12 days into June, but want to point that out.
No, and it's fair to say that for Bishop, who essentially didn't play at all last year or the year before, that it probably is taking him a few reps to feel comfortable in the batter's box again. So, you know, you would want to see a second half burst from him. And he has done a better job at cutting down the strikeouts. But, you know, kind of back to the Joey Bart question, I think – so I said something on Twitter the day that he was sent down, which is that the most surprising part of Bart's struggles in the major leagues to me – in both 2020 and this year have been that he's really struggled against velocity. If you go to Baseball Savant, you can dial up, you know, how hard pitches are thrown. And he literally doesn't have a hit in his career against pitches thrown 95 miles or above. And, you know, that's not a lot of at-bats when you just take the last pitch of an at-bat. It's like 0 for 28 or something like that. But if you look at all the pitches he's got at 95, it adds up. And he really has not been able to catch up to the speed of the major league game because people are throwing in the upper 90s up there. So I think, you know, when you say, what does it mean when the coaches are going to work it on him, there's some mechanical fixes that I think they need to do with his load and his swing to allow him to catch up to the heat of the major league game. Cause I think that's really where he's getting beat. It's just the inability to hit what is now the major league fastball, which is, you know, 96, 97, 98, 99. What those changes are, I'm not sure, but I think that's the kind of area that they've got to take a swing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things when you go to FanGraphs and you just look at the scouting report and you're like, well, game power 45, projective 50, that's pretty good. Raw power 60, good. Speed 30, sure, he's a catcher. Fielding, he's fine. But then his hit tool is a 30. And you just, you know, you're seeing it on the field.
Where the adjustments that can be I guess an interesting aspect of this is, where is the tipping point in today's major leagues for how many strikeouts are too many or how little contact is too little? We saw while we were watching Bart that he was over that tipping point. But I don't exactly know where it is, particularly for a catcher, because catcher's offense is so abysmal these days. Like, could he survive with 35% K rates or – I'm not sure where it is. They just got to get him a little more competitive, because obviously that last month or so, he just wasn't competitive at the plate.
Absolutely. I mean, for the organization, it seems that Zaidi targets 2.5 to 1 or thereabouts, tries to keep it in that range. So even allowing that Bart, you know, the power tool will cover, maybe it's 3 to 1, and he's at basically 5 to 1. You know, so it's strikeouts to walk I'm talking about. And that's not even like bringing hits into it. But I guess I was just thinking, what is the value of minor league coaches working with a player against minor league competition now that you're saying it's major league talent that he needs to adjust to? What's the level of instruction he's going to get that's going to help him?
Well, so I think the easy answer to what's the difference between the minor league coaches working with the major league coaches working on him is just that the stakes are a little lower, that he can, he can relax. He can get, you know, that sort of mental restart or whatever. And he's not failing in front of 40,000 people. And that makes a difference because, you know, if you gets into your head, you know, things can spiral on you, and being able to take, try things out in a little lower stakes environment is certainly beneficial. I think the Giants do a really good job at trying to make sure that the way they teach things and the messaging and the tools they use are pretty consistent from levels to levels. So I don't think there's anything different about the work that's being done in the minors, but I just think it's a little less stress to try out new mechanical, you know, approaches.
So yeah, I'll just say as an example that I think one of the beat writers, when he got sent down, tweeted that, you know, they tried a bunch of stuff. They tried a timing mechanism. So imagine if you're Joey Bart and you're in the majors, right? And you try this toe tap and you strike out. And the next at bat, you try a toe tap and you strike out. And the bat after that, maybe you don't do it because you're like, I need to help this team win. In the minors, that's not going to be the case. In the minors, you can try and see if it works and give it a better workout than just, no, I have to do my best to help this team.
Yeah, and to expand on that, I've had you know, players or tell me in years past, like, oh, this dip, this month that you can see where I did really badly, I was trying out a mechanical change there. I was working on something. When guys are working on something, a dip in performance is kind of to be expected because it's not natural to them. They're trying to really change their whole muscle memory and the way they move. So yeah, it's a lot easier to be doing that in Sacramento and failing a little bit while you're trying to get to the ultimate success than to be doing it, you know, against the Dodgers.
And having Tommy La Stella come by every couple of days being like, I would simply not strike out. Like, you know, I'm sure the clubhouse is a part of it too. Yeah, because you want to do well and feel like you're participating. So, all right, well, that's – I mean, the Joey Bart talk, the mystery, I think – everyone who paid his attention figured that he was going to have a big adjustment period. I just wanted to get a sense of you're much closer to all this. You see these guys basically coming in into the hangar for repairs just to get a sense of how that might start to look. Now, other guys that you've seen.
Doug actually sees the hangar. I'm more of the like aircraft assembly.
Either way, I think is sort of that's kind of what I'm curious about now that you're paying that you're much more in tune with that or seeing it a lot more often. Is there anything that has struck you or that you have picked up in the last couple of years that you're like, oh, that's great. I gained some insight that I didn't quite have before, or that makes a lot more sense now.
Well, I it is interesting to me just sort of talking to some of the instructors and the hitting coaches, the amazing amount of resources that they are giving these players these days. The staffs are large. The data is incredibly large. And the way they, you know, they sit down with these players every day, you know, before games to kind of look at stuff to prepare and game plan. And preparation is a really big thing in this organization. And it's, you know, you kind of say like Mike Yastrzemski and Gabe Kapler were the perfect fit for each other because they're both such great believers in preparation. That really filters down at every level. And they're having, you know, hitting meetings to talk about the pitchers they're going to see, you know, what their game plan is against guys, how to stop, you know, how to stop swinging at that slider in the dirt that's been getting you. Like, what do you look for instead? The way they use data and preparation as a tool to kind of make guys feel good in the box is really, really impressive. And then the other thing that they do, and the Giants do this too, is, you know, they're taking BP off pitching machines that are cranked way up high, and they're hitting these foam balls that spin at like ridiculously high rates, way higher than any human can throw them, so that when they get to the game speed actually feels slow for them. That's something that really worked, you know, the major league level last year, where we saw like Posey and Crawford and everybody were hitting really well against high end velocity in a way they hadn't the years before. So it's interesting to see them trying this kind of at the lower levels, at all the levels, really. Almost every level is kind of taking practice the same way the Giants are.
Hmm. That's great, because it's what the continuity alone, I think, would be what's very helpful geared towards all that. So I guess the big question that anyone just dipping in with some minor curiosity in the minor leagues is, who are some names that they're standing out to you?
Well, I mean, Marco Luciano is, he's unfortunately, they've had quite a few injury issues this year, and he's on the shelf for a little bit right now with some back issues. They're not expected to keep him off the field very long, but he's really having a sensational season. I don't know if people kind of get how good a season is, because he's, I don't know, seventh or eighth youngest player in the Northwest League, and he's been among the top three in nearly every offensive category, second in slugging, second in OPS. He's like third in average. Really, really good season, and particularly coming off that, you know, that rough entry he had last year, the last month, where he went up to high A and kind of struggled late in the year. It's been really impressive to see kind of the adjustments he's made this year, and hopefully, you know, he'll be moving up, you know, to be a 20-year-old in double A, which would be a very good track for him. A few other guys who've really popped this year, I think, are Grant McCray, who's was a third round pick in 2019 out of high school. His father played briefly for the A's, I believe, and the White Sox. A really athletic kid, and somebody who's really impacted again by the pandemic, as all these guys were, because he basically signed, he played a month in, you know, the complex league, and then there was no baseball for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then last year he came out and he was hurt to be in the year. So he went back to the complex while he's rehabbing. So this is really his first year, and he's, you know, kind of showing the tools that everybody knew were there. He's a really fast center fielder. He's a great arm, has more power than, you know, his frame looks like it should hold. He's really kind of a Steven Duggar kind of player, as a 21-year-old in San Jose. He's been pretty exciting. Casey Schmidt, who was a second rounder in 2020 and had something of a disappointing year last year in San Jose, although he was really starting to heat up right at the end of the year when he broke a bone in his wrist getting hit by a pitch. He's been, if Luciano hasn't been the best player in the Northwest League, Casey Schmidt has been. And he is, I would say, the best defensive player in the system, probably, as a third baseman.
Oh, wow.
Just incredible hands, this lightning transfer to his arm, great arm. He did some pitching in college, a very accurate arm. Really, really good defensive third baseman. In fact, he's been playing shortstop since Luciano's been on the IL. And while he's, you know, a great third baseman, he's a capable shortstop. I mean, he's a really gifted defensive player. Had a little bit of a downturn at the beginning of this month when he hurt his ankle. But he's been just an offensive force. He's, you know, he makes a lot of contact, which that was true in last year, even when the numbers weren't there. In San Jose, he had one of the lowest strikeout rates in the league. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for average. He walks. He kind of does everything the organization would want. He's a real guy too. A huge arrow up guy. I think he's, you know, definitely top 10. He might even be top 5 in the system.
Totally put him on my radar. I had no idea.
Yeah, I was a big fan of his last year, even when he was down a little bit in the numbers. But this year, he's looked fantastic. Then they're just a massive bunch of pitchers. They drafted a ton of pitchers last year. They're all in San Jose, and most of them have big, big arms. But the biggest of them is Mason Black, who was their third-round pick out of Lehigh last year. I saw him in spring training, and I was like, gee, who is this guy? Because he was just a monster. He was like throwing 97, 98 with this really hopping fastball, and he had a tight slider. And, you know, the slider has varied a little bit this year, but the fastball and everything pops for this guy. And he throws strikes. He throws hard. He throws strikes. He's already pitched his way out of the Cal League and is up in Eugene now. He's really been the best pitcher from last year's draft class, bar none. I mean, he's been much more impressive than, you know, Mikulski and Bednar, who were taken above him, who are doing fine. But Mason Black has been extremely impressive this year.
That's great. And
so where would you rank? He's not on anybody's radar before this year, as far as I know. And now he is very much on people's radar, at least people who paid attention to San Jose. So where would you put Von Braun in the system?
Super interesting question. So, you know, I saw Braun again in spring camp, and I was like, wow, this guy's kind of interesting because he was playing on like the double – he played on all the teams. But I saw him on the double-A team, and he looked like he fit in with those guys. He was really, really fast, and he's just got huge power without a big swing. It's really interesting. He takes kind of a, you know, like 70s sort of Steve Garvey swing, but he produces this huge power. And I talked to somebody who was – you know, had him at like perfect game events. I mean, he was in high school and said, oh, he's just a skinny little dude. Just a tiny little guy. He didn't impress you at all. And then I guess, you know, somewhere during the pandemic, he grew. And I think he maybe was a late bloomer. And he's now a real kind of physical monster. It was really weird because he's way too old for the Cal League. And I kind of wish the Giants would move him up. But he has real physical tools. And I remember I was talking to a scout in spring camp, a scout for another team, but a former major leaguer. And I was, you know, who do you like here? Who's impressed you? And it was all, you know, like the guys, the big guys, the big bonus guys, the big high round draft guys. And then Von Braun. And I'm like, really? Von Braun? He's like, oh yeah, he's impressive. And so I was kind of watching him like, yeah, he is impressive, isn't he? I mean, he's, if the question is where would you rank him, and rankings are all, you know, kind of, and meaningless anyway. I mean, I would put him in that, like, I don't know, back into the top 30 kind of range. Like, he definitely has skills that will play, but he's just such a weird unknown because he kind of came from nowhere, and he's playing in this league where he is really a man among boys. I mean, almost literally a man among boys, just physically imposing and older than him. And he just looks like he's toying with these people. I guess we'll know as he gets moved up, but there's something there for sure.
Another name I had no idea about. Okay.
been just for listeners, he's been the player of the week in the Cal League for like 8 straight weeks, just approximating it.
Yeah, they can't find anyone else to give it to because every single week he's like 16 for 20 with, you know, 3 home runs. And he's like 23 out of 24 stolen base attempts too. He's a physical specimen. This is really interesting. He comes from the I'm not sure if I can even come up with the name of the college. It's like Florida Southern College. It's a really tiny little place that is actually the alma mater of Brian Bridges, who's the Giants national cross checker, which I think is maybe how he got on their radar. But he's just one of these guys who's really come from out of nowhere and has opened some eyes.
If you had to guess, why haven't they moved him up?
I would guess it's, you know, they like people to feel comfortable. He doesn't have all that much experience because, as they say, a lot of his college career was sort of wiped out by pandemic. He did have a fantastic debut last year at the Complex League. He put up ridiculous numbers there too. But you thought, yeah, older college guy, Complex, blah, 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 blah. There's, you know, a dozen of those guys every year. But now he's doing the same thing at the next level. Whenever I talk to him about promotions, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that they want to talk about besides just numbers. And it's always about, you know, playing time opportunities, you know, how to make the rosters all fit, how comfortable people feel, how mature people are, how well they think they'll be able to deal with, you know, the dislocations that come with midseason promotions. So they have a lot of different kind of balls in the air.
Fair
with
enough.
These things. But I do think that, generally speaking, they've been pretty conservative on assignments and promotions. And I think someone pointed this out to me that's been true of Zaidi in previous, you know, with the Dodgers and the A's too. A lot of the places he's been around tend to send like college pitchers to low A, which a lot of other organizations won't. So I just think maybe this is an organizational temperament that we're seeing develop, that they tend to be pretty conservative about assignments.
Or especially, I mean, I think I can understand that. Let's get them comfortable with everything, with all the stuff around the game, and like see it, like let them know that they can carry their performance from, you know, college and maybe hit the ground running
and then go from there. That seems like that would make sense. Just I pull it up his numbers. I've got two thoughts on this. First of all, he's hitting 351, 440. He's got a 1089 OPS, 13 home runs in 202 at-bats. That's this year. 23 stolen bases, like you mentioned. But the most important thing is we have another one in my growing suspicion that the Giants are merely targeting players who look like Gabe Kapler.
You know, what's really cool about Vaughn, too, is somewhere during the pandemic, he started wearing one of those gaiters. And I think he just likes the look of it because he wears it in his at bats. He's got this real like ninja look when he's at the plate, which is very cool.
They may not be moving him up until he can show that he can grow a Kapler equivalent beard. That could be part of it too. All right, Doug, do you have any more questions?
I was just curious about actually a couple guys, just quick hits on him. So I remember the Giants added Randy Rodriguez to their 40 man this offseason. Yeah. And then I have heard very little about him since then. I know he's in the lower minors, but what's going on with him?
So he is starting this year. He had this just ridiculous year in San Jose's bullpen last year where he went, I think, the last 2 months of the season without giving up a run. And he was throwing it up to 99 and he had this unbelievable strikeout to walk ratio. It was really an incredible year. And when they add him to the 40 man, they talked about stretching him out. And I'd heard scouts look at him and say he could start because he was throwing like 3-4 inning stints last year. So he's been starting for Eugene. Eugene's had a really weird year because, well, it shouldn't be a full season league because it rains all the time up there. So like all April, they were like, they'd play a game, then they'd get two rained out, and then they'd play a game and it'd get suspended in the fourth inning. So it's been weird up there in general. But Rodriguez, and the other thing with Rodriguez, because he was a 40-man guy, he didn't get to report when the minor league people reported on February 1st. He didn't get to report until after the lockout was finished. So he was a little bit behind the rest of the guys just in terms of stretching out. So they're really conservative with him, getting him stretched out. He has thrown 5 innings, I think, in each of the last 2 starts. And he's looked good. He's given up a couple home runs, which is interesting because he didn't give up a home run, I think, all last year. But the arm is really fast. He's got a little bit of a Camilo Duvall delivery and kind of a whippy sidearm delivery. Really lively fastball and kind of a deadly splitter and an interesting change. So he's looked good. They are stretching him out successfully. I think the short story is this is a really good kind of reliever to starter transition that's going on with him so far.
Okay. Then going down to San Jose, a guy who got a lot of hype sort of in the prospect circles at least, and is having a decent season, a good season for someone his age, but Averson Arteaga, what's he been doing?
So he is really interesting because he was – when they signed him, he was kind of a glove guy. He was like a really good athlete with great defensive shortstop. And then last year in the rookie complex, he hit a bunch of home runs. And I had people tell me like, oh, don't believe power at the Papago Park because there's a wind that comes through the Red Bluffs there and it plays a little offensive. But watching him this year, I mean, he has real power. He's got some very strong forearms. And he started the year – just striking out all the time and swinging kind of wildly. His April was a little like you could see the 19-year-old in him. He was eager to make an impression and was swinging at all kinds of balls out of the zone. And he still has strikeout issues going on, but when he connects, he puts a real juice into the ball. He's got real opposite field power, which has kind of surprised me. So what's he doing? He's striking out 28% of the time, which has come down pretty significantly from where he was in like April and early May, showing a lot of power. It is interesting. He's hitting 272 despite striking out almost 30% of the time. But then all of this does go with what I said at the beginning was that he was a real defensive specialist when he signed. He's a tremendous defensive shortstop. And, you know, if Casey Schmidt isn't the best defensive player in the system, Arteaga probably is. So I would say, you know, as a 19-year-old playing full season ball for the first time, this has been a really, really good year for him. There's a little wildness, a little rawness in his game, but he's showing all the things that make you see what kind of player he can be, which is a really good up the middle defensive player with surprising power and you know, hard hit ability.
And then my final one is a guy that I've seen in Sacramento. I haven't seen him on a lot of high level prospect radar. Like he might, you know, for the guys who go like 80 deep, he might be in the lower end of that, but he's been having a really good year. So Joey Marciano, do you see major league potential there?
I absolutely see major league potential in Joey Marciano. I really like Marciano. He was had a great year in Richmond last year. And I wonder if I'm not sure if he's a minor league free agent at the end of this year. He's definitely Rule 5 eligible. But as guys like, you know, Alvarez and Garcia sort of, you know, become free agents, you wonder if Marciano's a guy that may get a look. You know, he throws like 95, 96. He has a really good slider that gets swing throughs. The control, you know, could firm up. But he's had really good years, 2 years in a row at two hard levels. I mean, Sacramento's not an easy league to pitch in, and he's having a really successful year. So, you know, I don't. Somebody asked me on Twitter why they don't, you know, release Jose Alvarez and bring up Joey Marciano. I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. But I do think he's a guy who has. I mean, he's left-handed and he throws 96. That's. You don't have to have a whole lot more to be a major leaguer. I think he has a major league future. Yeah. But I have to say now we've gone all through this thing and we haven't talked about David VR. Doesn't everybody want to talk about when the Giants are going to bring up David VR?
Well, you said that he was hurt or for a setback for a week. So I thought we were just it's on pause. So.
Well, the funny thing about VR is because I left a comment on your Substack a few weeks ago about VR being, because you were wondering why they hadn't, or you were talking about why maybe they had.
I believe I linked to your wonderful piece in that too.
Is this a Pucci situation? Where's Pucci?
No, it was like I think they traded for Padlo instead of calling it VR so they could get rid of the roster spot whenever they wanted to was part of it, which they ended up doing.
I mean, it is. I would love to be a fly on the wall, you know, at a Giants front office meeting and hear what they actually think about VR, because they did expose him to the Rule 5 draft this year and there ended up not being one, so that worked out okay. But coming off a really good year in Richmond last year where he set the franchise record for home runs, which is going to last about another 2 weeks, they exposed him to the Rule 5 and then, you know, they went out and got Kevin Battle. It's like they're not showing any signals to suggest that they can't wait to get him up to San Francisco. But there is a player there. I mean, there is a guy who does a lot of the things that they like, which is doesn't chase, walks a lot, hits for power when he hits the ball. You know, the batting average, like Doug wrote in his piece, the batting average and some of the numbers are inflated by, you know, playing in Albuquerque and Reno and Vegas. But even just his Sacramento numbers is a player kind of like Jason Vossler when the Giants signed him last year. And it seems like that's a piece the Giants will want to utilize at some point.
I mean, he's got a 2-1 strikeout to walk right now going right now. And he's basically got an even ground ball flyout situation. Seems like profile wise, he's syncing up with what they're looking for. 27 extra base hits total out of so more than half of his hits are for extra bases. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah. And interestingly, he started playing second base lately, which he doesn't seem like a natural second baseman to me, but it's interesting that they're moving him around the field.
Yeah. I mean, more than anything, that could be the prelude to him getting called up because Tommy La Stella can't play second base anymore. He apparently can't play the field anymore.
No.
And so if the Giants are saying that maybe that's going to be a spot they're going to need someone this year, you know, keeping it probably in the back of their minds, if VR ends up being as good as they hope, that they can move him to third when Longoria goes, they can move him to first, they can do other things with him in the infield. But if they want him up this year, then second base probably is the spot for him.
Yeah, and I think if a best case scenario for VR would be somebody who looks kind of like what Wilmer Flores has done for the Giants the last few years. I mean, that's kind of the player he is defensively and offensively. And that would be a really good outcome for him, obviously.
Well, I think I have one reason why he hasn't been moved up yet. His Gabe Kapler similarity is not very high. I would not put him at a high Gabe Kapler resemblance percentage. So that might be what's holding him back.
Is this the new version of everybody looks like Buster?
I think so. I mean, Tommy La Stella is Brandon Belt, is mini Brandon Belt. Like, but that's about it. Everyone else is sort of Kaplerized. Is, you know, Austin Wins especially. It just seems like he's right there. That's why they got him. All right. Well, this has been great, Roger. And I really want you to tell the people about what you're doing and where and how they can find your work.
Oh my goodness. How can't you find my work? I write a Substack newsletter called There Are Giants. That's R like the name Roger. And I Monday through Friday send out something kind of like Minor Lines on steroids, which tries to keep abreast of everything going on in the system and, you know, what I'm hearing from players and coaches, what I'm seeing from players, everything I can think of, I put in there. And then I will also do a few extra pieces specific to whatever happens to be flowing through my mind any time of day. So usually somewhere in the 6-7 posts per week that I put out on the Giant system. And then I have a podcast that goes with that. And I have, you know, I'll talk to, you know, people on the game or prospect writers and kind of talk to them about what's going on in the system. And then I also talk with players. So I think Frankie Tostado, I had on a podcast last week, and I'm going to be talking with Chris Wright, who's a left-handed relief pitcher, this week. There's all kinds of stuff going on at There Are Giants.
That's right. RogerMunter.substack.com if you want the direct link. You also spoke with the AA manager, correct?
I did. He has an interesting – we talked about a rule that he has to change extra innings, which is actually being adopted in like some independent leagues and I think the Major League Baseball Draft League as well. This like sudden death extra inning rule that he created when he was coaching in the Frontier League.
I know. I'm half on board with it because I'm a big proponent of sudden death. But his was basically like football. You receive – listen to the podcast. It's Richmond manager, Dennis Belfry. And it's – yeah, these are all great. I'm so glad that you're doing this. They can also follow you on Twitter. I'm going to out you there, at Rog61.
And that will take you to everything I do. So
that's right. Don't. All right. Well, thanks so much, Roger. Take care, and we'll may hopefully have you back later in the year.
Yeah, it's always great talking to you guys.
Yep, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Doug.